I am Sarah Century.
And I'm Kala Dan. Hello, hi, and how are you? Welcome back to Referential. As always, I am your host, Dr. Kala Dan Noss. So, I have been busy in the edit cave over the last few days. I've been getting together the latest main episode where we'll be looking at the theme of Black girlhood in media. I'm going to be joined by the one and the only Shannon Miller, aka Pop Dish Kitchen. But that episode is still a week or so away from your ears. So, in the meantime, since I'm probably not going to be touching on comics after the last episode for a little bit, I figured I'd give the comic book fans amongst you listening a little treat. Some time ago, I was asked by friend of the pod and previous guest, Sarah Century, to join her on her podcast, Best Issue Ever. Sarah and I got into one of our all-time favorite comic books, Wonder Woman 20 by George Perez. You are about to tune in to a great conversation with one of my favorite podcasters about one of the greatest comic books ever made. And while I still have you, Sarah Century is also coming out with a new zine. It is currently available for pre-order and out April 4th. It's titled My Wild Heart Bleeds With Yours, Writings on Lesbian Vampires by Sarah Century. You can find that on her website, sarahcentury.gumroad.com. That is S-A-R-A-C-N. T-U-R-Y.gumroad.com. You'll also be able to find her other most recent zine, Scream, an overview of the first six films. I actually just read that one, so high recommend. You'll find links for Sarah's website in the show notes. Just scroll below on your app. All right, so without much further ado, I now present you Best Issue Ever. Featuring me.
In the morning.
Hey everyone, it's me, Sarah Century, and this is the Best Issue Ever podcast, where I talk to friends and creators about some of the greatest single issue comics ever. It's me, the host of this podcast. Today's issue was chosen by Dr. Kala Dan Noss, who is the host of the Referential podcast. It is canon as of this episode that Referential is the cousin podcast of Best Issue Ever. So please go check it out. I just guested on an episode that was about Agatha All Along, so there's a great jumping on point right there. Kala Dan brings us Wonder Woman Volume 2, Number 20, which is written and drawn by George Perez, with inks by Bob McLeod, colors by Carl Gafford, and letters by John Costanza. Oh, and it's edited by someone named Karen Berger. I'm not sure if she ever did anything after this other than, starting Vertigo and pretty much changing the trajectory of comics. Speaking of changing the trajectory of comics, this episode we are in the famous George Perez run of Wonder Woman. This comic in particular is regarded as one of the greatest Wonder Woman stories of all time. I'm gonna go a step further and call this one of the greatest single-issue comics of all time. Wonder Woman had been languishing for quite a while before this due to, honestly, sexism. In general, a lot of male creators tended to write Diana as a bit of a cipher in her own stories, and Steve Trevor was normally the one who was driving the narrative. That old bias against the character still remained, and she continued to be treated as a bit of an afterthought despite her immense popularity, like she had a show and everything. You know the one, Wonder Woman! Though the groundbreaking crossover series Crisis on Infinite Earths had breathed new life into characters like Batman and Superman, the general stigma around Wonder Woman made it seem like she was going to continue on without too much in the way of direction. That is, until George Perez decided to drop this legendary run that reestablished Diana as one of DC's top draws. That is a very, very brief overview of the backstory of what is going on with this comic. If you want to read more, you could always check out, you know, Wikipedia, I guess, or I also recommend ordering issue number 147 of the Comics Magazine back issue, which features a lengthy retrospective of this incredible series. I own it, I read it, it's a delight. Okay, let me just begin with the cover of this issue. It is done in black and white newspaper style, only with two headlines that are in red. The main text reads, "Who killed Mindy Meyer?" Oh my god, Mindy Meyer's dead? Okay. Well, as a consolation to her, she got top billing in this paper, and at least they chose an amazing photo of her to run. The subtitle reads, "Murdered star publicist had many enemies." She sure did. Below that, there's a photo of a very sad-looking Diana and her, companion, Julia, walking out of a police station. Below them, the newspaper has printed photos of all of the suspects in the case, which feels like irresponsible journalism, but who am I to say? I don't have huge sunglasses and a mustache like the detectives in this story, so perhaps I lack some authority here. Okay, yeah, so Mindy is dead. Fortunately, Detective Edward Indelicato, which is perhaps one of the greatest detective names of all time, is on this case, and he is bringing quite the knack for Purple Prose along with him. More or less, there is cocaine on Mindy's desk, Mindy has been shot, everyone is bummed that she's gone because she was pretty hot, and the cops have exactly one lead, a guy named Steve who used to work here. Also, a very shady man named Skeeter LaRue, who she got a bunch of cocaine from, is MIA, so just put a pin in that. As the cover notes, Mindy had a lot of enemies, and we meet a few of them. Steve was one of Mindy's employees that she hooked up with, but she fired him during a cocaine-fueled rant just before she was murdered. Steve insists that he couldn't have killed Mindy, so the detectives question his fellow former co-worker who is also standing in the unemployment line, Denny. This character stumbled on evidence that Skeeter had been using the company to smuggle drugs and brought it all to Mindy in hopes of getting Skeeter ousted. Well, it turns out that Mindy was enjoying those drugs just fine, thank you very much, so rather than thanking Denny, she threatened to blacklist her for life. Denny relays this all to Steve at the bar, and he gets pretty riled up. In the present, Steve insists he never would have hurt Mindy, but things aren't looking too great for our guy. Fortunately for Steve, Diana, Princess of Themyscira, is on his side. She finds Skeeter LaRue and throws her lasso of truth on his ass, forcing him to tell her what happened to Mindy. This is something that the detectives actually call her out for here in a bit. It would definitely qualify as a coerced confession in my book. But that doesn't really matter, because Skeeter is actually his own worst enemy. Diana really doesn't have to do much. It turns out that Mindy was ready to throw his ass out onto the sidewalk when he tried to use cocaine to keep her compliant, and she came at him with a wine bottle and chased his ass off. He came back and shot her, framing Steve for the murder. In the present, a couple of gunmen run into the room and they catch Diana off guard. While she deals with them, Skeeter leaps into an electric fence in hope of escape. Yeah, that's right. The guy named Skeeter is basically killed by a giant bug zapper. And, well, no one's all that distressed about it, I'll tell you that. In the end, we discover that Mindy actually perished not from the gunshot wound, but after doing the bag of cocaine that Skeeter had attempted to blackmail her with earlier in the issue. When he finally got in and shot her, she was already dead, leaving Wonder Woman to walk away with tears in her eyes, asking, why? Why indeed, Diana? Why indeed? So what happens next? Well, for Mindy, not too much, though she does receive a fond send-off in the first annual of this series, which is a story titled Testament. Here we learn a little bit more about Mindy's rocky upbringing. You know, along the way, we discover that Diana wasn't just a client for Mindy, but someone that she genuinely envied. In fact, there's a certain line where she muses, "All the happiness I've clawed and fought for, you were simply born into. On that wonderful paradise island, what I wouldn't give to know that kind of feeling." I know what you mean, Mindy. So here's to a real one. R.I.P. in peace, Mindy Meyer. As for Wonder Woman, George Perez departs as the artist of this book with issue 24, but he is still the writer until issue 62, and it's worth sticking around. It's great. After he left, I'm not gonna lie, there's some dead zones where Wonder Woman was not popping up on my pull list. But there's also been a ridiculous number of all-time great Wonder Woman stories. It's real hard to top this run because it's incredible, But it ended like 32 years ago, so as you can imagine, there's been some time for new bangers to develop. I love Diana a ton. This is easily one of my favorite comic book characters of all time, and this is a great spotlight issue for her, even though she's almost kind of a secondary character. She doesn't pop up that much. Well, so I don't know. Are you ready for 70-ish minutes of us gushing about this comic? I sure hope so, because here's my guest.
Hello, my name is Kaladin Noss. I am the creator and the host of the podcast Referential, where we have serious conversations about frivolous topics. So things like talking about Black capitalism and Black radicalism through the context of Beyoncé's career, talking about materialism and poptimism and the move of punk to pop through talking about Josie and the Pussycats movie. We cover sort of the gamut of things. And I am here today to talk about, well, I'm here to talk about Mindy Mayer, but let's say Wonder Woman, number 20.
Yes. Okay. So many things to talk about just from that introduction. I wanted to say that I did just look at your feed and saw the Josie and the Pussycats episode and was like, okay, I'm going to have to jump in on this because I have long loved that movie. What a classic.
Yes, it is a classic. Yeah. I had the pleasure of doing it with some new friends of mine who host their own podcast called Queer Film Catch-Up. This was the topic, like, we came up to it, and then it was really fun to dig into. That was one of my childhood films. I love Josie and the Pussycats, but don't get me started. I'll start singing Backdoor Lover. Okay, I did it anyway, sorry.
Josie and the Pussycats is classic. The comics are great. This is like an yes. Archie comics fan podcast. It comes up again and again. Literally,
I love Archie.
Anytime somebody can even is that even remotely linked to Archie, and it's like, cool. Let's hype Archie because I love those comics. They continue to be great. Josie and the Pussycats continues to be great, but the movie is one of a kind, and everybody needs to see it.
Truly. Yes, if you've not seen the Josie and the Pussycat, I keep saying Josie and the Pussycat dolls, but I really need to stop that. Josie and the Pussycat, can you just imagine? I mean, it's not like...
I went into like an alternate reality just now and was, whoa.
Honestly, like, I think there would be a lot of parallels. You know, Robin Anton is Fiona, Nicole Scherzinger as someone evil. Well, let's not get into her just yet.
Yeah, no kidding. My face is... Listeners, you can't see my facial expression, but it is as if I had just stepped into an alternate dimension thinking about this. All right. Also, so I wanted to shout out, you did coverage of Trans Pride Brighton. I really loved that.
Yes.
There's one part, and then there's a second part that is coming, but yes. I love the first part, and I just wanted to hype that.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm really proud of that one. So if y'all want to check out something I've done, start over there.
Yeah, do that. I just now started listening to the X-Men 97 breakdowns because I just started watching it, which everyone is horrified by.
You know what? I was listening to like old episodes and you were saying that I've not watched it yet. And I'm just like, no, by now you must have watched it, right? Like you must have begun. I cannot believe.
I have like some, it's like every time I get Disney, I'm just like, I'll watch like one thing in a month.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to stop having Disney for a year. But I have now finally, my brother now has a subscription and we live in the same house. So I can use his Disney by Disney's own rules and like, don't come to my house, Disney. We're splitting a subscription, but it's fine. But I just started watching it. It rules. So I'm going to go through and listen to your podcast episodes as I go through. So this is going to be very exciting for me.
Yes, I'm really excited to hear your thoughts about X-97, but we'll get off the air. We'll talk.
Now at this point, I'm going to have to do like a special episode or something because it's been brought up like 9 times in this podcast. So also the thing that we're here to talk about actually is Wonder Woman number 20, as you mentioned, which is volume 2. It is the George Perez run, and it is, I mean, If you've read the greatest Wonder Woman stories ever told, this is in there. Mm-hmm. If somebody cites mm-hmm. their favorite issue from this run, it is often this issue. This yeah. issue is incredible. I personally always cite the Barbara Minerva issue as my favorite, but yeah, which is yeah. why I really appreciated being able to come back and look at this, which is a little bit like a few issues after the Barbara Minerva versus Diana. Mm. And in the wake of me loving Barbara Minerva so much, this one maybe like slipped under my radar just a bit. And being able yeah. to reread it again and to appreciate it and be able to dive into this character who honestly, yeah, Mindy's everything. I love Mindy. She's yes, great.
Yeah. Yeah, when you came to me, for some, like, it took me, I think, half a second until, like, it clicked to me. It's like, oh, this is the issue I want to do. I want to talk to you about Mindy. Yeah, no, I love, in general, first of all, let's just start with, I love Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman, yes. like, I have a lot of different fandoms. Wonder Woman is also one of my, I guess, ur-texts, my proto-texts somewhere.
Yeah.
I think when I first started reading the George Perez Wonder Woman, Mindy was, like, the character that registered for me as like, oh yeah, she's I'm gonna love her, I'm gonna want to see her forever. And then I hit this issue. yeah it's a great issue, like you were saying. It is like one of the best issues of this whole tremendous run, and it is a really tremendous run if people haven't had the yeah. chance to read this volume of Wonder Woman. And there's a lot of good Wonder Woman stories there, but yeah.
Yeah, it's as good as everyone says it is, honestly. Mm. It's just incredible. And I mean, the thing about being a Wonder Woman fan too is that there's some dry spells. There's some times yes. where you cannot read Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Like,
there's time where Wonder Woman is an unreadable book, and you just
yeah,
go,
somewhat
damn.
Recently.
Yes. Some would say.
No shade. Some might say somewhat recently. No shade. You know, shade.
Which is like, I will also say that there was like a killer like 5 or 6 years of Wonder Woman stories.
Yes,
before
yes,
the run that perhaps some would not enjoy.
Yeah, and I will say, like, the thing about Wonder Woman is that she's, so I occasionally, or often, I really like to pick out a book that has, like, I don't know, 100 issues, or just, like, 100, you know, it's, like, it's a long story, the way they used to do it back
yeah.
in the day. God,
yeah,
I sound my
I
age,
that.
Don't I? Yeah, and Wonder Woman, we're really lucky in that she is obviously one of the biggest characters in comic book history, and that means that a lot of people got to have a crack at her, at writing her, and writing her story. Not as many as we'd like, and not as many women as we'd like, specifically, but yeah. it means that there's a lot of interesting Wonder Woman takes out there. Yeah, there's a lot of really good Wonder Woman texts for people to, like, explore, but, you know, we gotta, this 80s run, man, like, come on. It's,
oh.
It's, like, where do we, I don't even know where to begin with just,
it's
like,
it's a horror
talking
comic, basically, from, like, the beginning.
Yes.
It's just a horror comic the whole time,
yeah.
and you're just like, wait, this is a superhero comic, right? Oh, it's also a horror comic, though. There's all kinds of horror through this entire run. This is kind of a noir story, I guess, in a way, like an updated, like, neo-noir kind of
this
story.
Issue.
But yeah, this issue.
Yes.
And, but I mean, there still is horror in this as well. But leading
yeah.
up to it, there's so many comics in this run where you're just like, wow, this is kind of a horror comic masterpiece. And I don't think that it gets credit for that, because people will go, oh, it's the best Wonder Woman story ever told. This was one of the best books on the shelves, like, during
yeah.
this time. It is incredible.
Yeah.
It is hands down one of the best comics of the 80s.
Yeah, and it is, I think we could say comfortably, like, the understanding of Wonder Woman that we have today, you know, comes from this. Like, this is the history of Wonder Woman as, like, we know it, as she exists sort of in, like, all DC franchises, I guess. We're talking
yes.
animated, we're talking comics, we're, like, all throughout. This is where it comes from, you know? Obviously not technically, but, like,
yeah.
our modern understanding of her really comes from here. I was just gonna say, I really like that point that you were making about the fact that it is a genre book, that it is a horror book specifically. It is playing with that, and, like, you know, that's no small part just to let George Perez, you know, go have a lot of fun drawing, like, really grotesque but beautiful and really intricate pages. And this issue specifically, I think one of the other reasons why I brought it to you is because the murder mystery is, absolutely one of my favorite genres, and this is more of a film noir take of it, which is also, like, as a film studies, like, nerd, I also like my other favorite genre, so seeing it sort of play with that. This book was really pushed the envelope, and people don't really, like, recognize that, because a lot of the things that it was doing just became the way things are and things that are done, you know what I mean? It created the status quo.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he takes us back to Paradise Island, and that is so huge. If you, like me, read all of the issues of Wonder Woman before this, and, you know, like back in the day, dating back to the 40s, and how little time she spends on Paradise Island. And yeah, now
she,
it's
she was
like
busy being a secretary.
Yeah, and you're just like, why would you leave life as literally royalty to come be a secretary for, like, the military? Like, what is this?
Yeah, America, Diana, the flag hero. Why?
Yeah, what, it's always weird. Yeah. It's like,
I mean, I could, I'm gonna get, I'm going on a tangent, but I have ideas. I have thoughts. I do find her, like, really interesting as, like, this, I suppose, foreign character who's really exoticized, and then being placed in the, like, in a flag suit, but, like, the most sexually suggestive. I find the way that she interacts as a figure of American imperialism and colonialism to be, like, really interesting. And I was looking, I mean, if we're looking at this issue, seeing her interact with people who are not white is always really interesting. This issue starts with her fighting members of, like, some kind of, was it like a Chinese syndicate, crime syndicate?
Yeah, you're just
in
like,
Boston.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, like, so seeing her sort of be used as, yeah, it was like that figure of, I guess, American imperialism, this law sort of, this figure of the law, I think is, you know, it's an interesting sort of interaction, specifically as someone who's an immigrant and often, like, trying to interrogate and deal with the idea of being the model minority in a state that, you know, is currently killing people like me. So, you know, it opens up an interesting field.
Every time I ask myself about Wonder Woman and imperialism, I walk away with more questions than I had before, yeah, frankly. And so it's a good kind of open-ended discussion, I think, with this character. But it does sure come up a lot in the comic.
Yeah, yeah,
even
yeah,
when it doesn't seem, because, yeah, this one begins exactly as you mentioned. And it's, you know, sometimes it, superheroes, it's like another thing too, where you go, oh, superheroes, cops, question mark. But basically the point is that she starts kind of roughing these guys up, and then they're like, what do you want? And she goes, answers. So you know that this is a superhero story, but you're not going to know after this, because it's all neo-noir and, like, stylism. You have these big blocks of text that are just the inner monologue of the detective, which is incredible.
Edward Delicato. Is that right? Is that the detective?
Yes, exactly.
It's such a great name. It's such a great name.
Indelicato. So good. They have this incredible splash page to open the story, which is, it says, who killed Mindy Meyer? And there is blood splats on the background. It's over the New York City skyline. And
I think it's Boston. I think it's Boston.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm like, East Coast? Never been. Just kidding. I guess I have. So this guy is hunched over his typewriter, and he's telling the story of going and finding the publicist who had many enemies, as the cover told us, which, P.S., the cover was also incredible. It's newspaper style.
Truly, the best cover. I need to get this and, like, have it framed in my home. Like, it is, I think this is, and this is a run with a lot of gorgeous covers.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorites. It's just, it's so good. It kind of, like, sets you up for this issue, because it kind of almost, it reads like something that a journalist would write, but it's actually, you find, I found out in the end, I was like, oh, he's a cop? I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
I was like,
totally.
I thought it was an article.
Yeah, you should get into writing, you know, like, retire.
You have a gift. You have a gift. Get out of the police station. My goodness. But maybe this was commentary on the lack of support for the arts and like the dying talents of a poor cop.
I'm going to read it that way, even if it's not. Mindy looks incredible. We'll say that because she does appear in this comic. But unfortunately, when we first meet her here, because she's obviously popped up before as Wonder Woman's publicist, once again, who has many enemies. I love that they just keep saying that after her name. It's so funny.
That's I want that in my obituary. Can I just say that? In my obituary, I'd be like,
has many enemies.
Has many enemies. Just like, that's it. That's all I want.
Star publicist in quotations, which is rude. That is actually her job.
How dare you? Look at the pictures on the wall. I think that's Barbara. I think I see. Yeah. There's actually one person I just noticed really looks a lot like Fairuza Balk. And I'm just like, that's an odd inclusion. I wonder who that's supposed to be.
Oh, I wonder. Yeah, now that I look, I'm like, oh, I do see Fairuza. In the craft, like craft
we
era.
Stand Fairuza.
How'd that happen?
We stand Fairuza, yeah. Why not?
Yeah, so Mindy has been killed brutally. This is horrible news. She is still in an incredible dress, though, which is wild.
Yeah.
She wears this like hot pink dress and shoes gorgeous. And completely matches. We'll see more of it later while she's alive, and it looks incredible. Here, we have to be very traumatized because this is a horrible death, and everybody is confused as to what's going on. This guy has a crush on Wonder Woman, like, immediately.
Which, like, annoying. Well, she's a looker, ain't she?
She is super
And it's,
hot.
Like, fair. But also, there is a dead woman on the floor, sir. What are you doing?
Can you focus? It's like watching CSI where like everybody is trying to like hook up while there's like they're at a crime investigation and you're like, or like what is this?
Or like one of those weird have you seen those Ryan Murphy 911 shows, that 911 Lone Star show where they're like fire police people who are just like going through natural tragedy after natural tragedy? If not,
no.
I really highly recommend it. I highly recommend it. It's ridiculous.
You said it's Ryan Murphy. Is that the vibe, right? Is always just like, wow, that's
it's
absurd.
Ryan Murphy doing ER, like he's doing ER, and it's really uncomfortable.
Yep. I'm just now watching another Ryan Murphy show, and I'm like, that's uncomfortable. This seems like the vibe. But what great actors. That's like what always happens.
Yeah. Well, basically, it's the same vibe as the comic. What's happening in the comic right now.
Okay, great. Okay, I will watch it. Because this rules. Yeah, they are trying to do police work. They have a guy that they suspect immediately. They are ready to send this guy down the river. What's his name? London, I think his last name is.
Steve Landon or London. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah. And he has gotten fired by Mindy, and he's just like, you know, I don't think I killed her. I'm pretty sure I didn't. And they're like, are you sure? And he's like, oh, no, I'm not sure.
I was like so drunk. I was so drunk.
Yeah,
he's not very sure
about
what's happened last night. We've all been there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just a blackout or two. It's fine.
But unfortunately, the cops disagree and are just like, hey, this is our prime suspect. They tell what happened at the board meeting. So there's this horrible guy. What is that guy's name? I forget him.
Okay, Skeeter LaRue, who just like, amazing, first of all, amazing name. Well done, George. But also like, why does he look like yassified Conan O'Brien? Do you like...
He does! Oh my God. I was like, amazing. Who does this remind me of? And now I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, it's yassified Conan O'Brien. And yeah, Skeeter is this guy that has kind of popped up in earlier issues.
Right.
He is a southern kind of sleazebag who's kind of seems to have hooked up with Mindy. And now things are going bad at the company because he's become an executive or something.
He also has one of the most bizarre choices, like the color choices of his outfit. He has like a pale yellow shirt and a white tie with a black jacket, yeah. And I'm just like, that's sketchy.
I mean, it really is, even for the 80s, even for the 80s, I just don't think this was appropriate work attire, you know?
However, somebody who has nailed work attire is Mindy.
I mean, let's just take a second. The pearls, the white lapel.
Like triple pearls, like it's like more than one string of pearls. Like,
And this is her looking rough, okay? This is her, she has done a couple of lines, God bless. She... She is awake, you know, through the grace of God and a cup of coffee. Like, she's doing her best here, and she is looking better than everybody else in that room. The bob is bopping. The earrings are earring.
This bob is honestly iconic. You've brought it up a few times before started recording.
Severe. I adore this woman. Just the minute I saw that bob, I was like, this is a sister. This is... When I saw the little flip in the corner, I was like, okay, yeah, no, I see her. Like, she is giving... yesterday, I needed a comfort watch, as many of us do now, I'm sure.
Sure.
And I was watching old episodes of Moonlighting. Have you ever seen Moonlighting?
Yes. Oh, my God. Uh-huh. It's been a while, but yes.
Yes, but, like, she's giving Maddie Hayes. Like, she's giving Sybil Shepherd in Moonlighting. It is... fabulous.
Oh my God. Her. Yeah, this just clicked. My perfect casting of the 80s for Mindy is now, bam, got it. Okay.
Brunette Sybil Shepherd. Do it.
Yeah, she would have killed in this role, frankly. Another time Hollywood failed us. So Mindy is, as you mentioned, she is on perhaps a bit of coke and is throwing papers around the office. Perhaps, just a question mark, I don't know. I'm throwing it out there. This is just a guess. The story literally tells you multiple times that
she's got more coke in her than a circuit party. God bless. Like, she's fine. She's doing okay. She's okay.
She's like, I'm doing great. I've never felt more lucid. And then is like throwing papers around being like, you're all fired. There's too much lawsuits.
Who's playing Kylie right now? Oh, me? Louder.
This is exactly what is happening. That this comic, he's getting fired. Our friend Landon is getting fired, and he does not take it great.
It's really sad.
Mindy hooked up with everybody in this company, apparently, which is like, usually I would frown upon, but it's Mindy, right? So you're like, well, God bless.
Yeah, I feel like she... You know, I feel like she's the kind of, I relate to this, is that a lot of, she operates like a gay man, and that like all these people I've slept with, but now we're just friends, you know, and they're my coworkers.
Yep. And they're like, but we're still in love with you. That's like the vibe.
And she's like, no, you're going to watch me fall down a cocaine nightmare hole and cry. And you'll be at my funeral. That is your position in my life.
Yep, that's what you're here for, and I know my role, so let's get started.
Mindy is basically a person who is experiencing twink death and not coping very well. Like, that is what she is.
Wow, nailed it. This where she's holding up this paper and shaking her hand, she's like shaking the paper in her hand, and she goes, well, darlings, no one makes a fool of Mindy Meyer. I do not forgive and forget. I lop heads, and like throws more papers around, and this guy is just traumatized. Like, I thought we were going to be in love still. And then he goes and cries. And then this girl who just hates Mindy because she's a hater is there. Well, because honestly, if I worked in this environment, I would be like, I'm on your side being mad at Mindy. Like, this seems intense. But because we love Mindy and we're reading the comic, we're on Mindy's side, right? So
we're just like, well, what do you expect when you look like you have wet hair walking around? Get yourself together, ma'am.
That's right. Again, they have to keep dropping in, like, P.S. this is a superhero comic still, so here's Wonder Woman doing some stuff.
Smush cat. A smash cut to Wonder Woman is in Chinatown at night.
Yep. Yep. And she commits a violence.
I'm gonna let you do this one.
Yeah, basically that. She just shows up and she's like, I need to hear more facts and information so that I can figure this out. And then they're just like... you better get out of here, you. And at that time, Wonder Woman It's like, it's always wild because it's like, was this show of force even necessary? Like, yes, you do punch this guy, but it's not like he could have pushed you around, you know, you could have just walked out.
Yeah, she goes to like the Tochoi, and which I guess is like a, it's all very problematic. These guys, by the way, are, I'm assuming they are meant to be Chinese. They are just, yeah, and she like attacks the bodyguard and then she wraps her lasso of truth, which there is a section in this comic where they actually talk about using the lasso of truth, like, and have a really interesting ethical conversation about it, which I feel like we don't get enough, but I guess we can wait to get to that. But yeah, it kind of feels like exactly what you were saying. They kind of just like remembered it was a super comic and added this little scene of her doing some punch em ups, and they this wasn't necessary. I didn't need this.
It's not. It's definitely not. And it is, yeah, the art once again continues to absolutely bang. And it says she's basically looking for Skeeter, which is a whole thing. Now everybody wants to figure out where Skeeter's at because he's sketchy. He's sketchier than these guys. Like, go deal with Skeeter.
Yeah, sketchier than the guys that the police are talking to. And so Wonder Woman has, I guess, a feeling. And these guys aren't going to tell her where Skeeter is until she lassos them and gets the truth out of the guy. And we find out that he is in a small warehouse in Bedford, right? Yes.
Yes. Now you have to go to a warehouse.
You have to go to a warehouse. You're gonna have to like deal with this. I just would. I'm not. To be fair, like, are you gonna trust the police with this? They seem to like have an idea in their head. You know, we gotta appreciate Wonder Woman for.
They're not too kind to Mindy. I mean, it's the 80s, right? So like, canonically, all cops can say is, wow, that's too bad that she's dead because she was hot still, even though she literally was in her 40s. And you're just like, there's just so many problems with that phrase. I just don't really, it's one of those where you just go,
I do find it really interesting. Like, there is this undercurrent where I feel like, I don't know, maybe the writing is sort of struggling with it a little bit, where it feels like the writing doesn't want to say she has it coming, but also is doing it at the same time. You know what I mean?
Totally.
There's like a bit of a battle of contrast, a battle happening there, where it feels like as you're reading this issue, they're not sure how much blame they want to place on Mindy, but also it feels very Comics Code Authority, to be honest to me.
Yes.
There's like an element of this. This is an after-school special sort of happening.
Or noir, even. Whenever, like, in noir movies, it's always like, well, the femme fatale has to die because she's like a bitch.
Yeah.
Like, but I loved her, so why did she have to die? But that's basically it. They have this idea, I think, of her. But the thing that I really think saves that narrative here is that Wonder Woman cares about Mindy and really wants to find out what happened and is hurt by her death. And that is, she's maybe the only one who really is. I mean, I think that everybody else has a lot of pretty complicated feelings towards Mindy, perhaps reasonably. Yeah. But I like that Wonder Woman just likes her. And of course, in my mind, lots of fan fiction happening after Wonder Woman and her star publicist with many enemies hung out. But, you know,
I like to think that's why like the old lesbian that she hangs around with, Julia, doesn't like her, and she's like, this is competition and I don't like it. Just take a second, she hasn't popped up really in this issue, not much, but Julia Capitalis,
yes,
right? Like, she's part of the sisterhood, right? Like,
oh yeah, for sure. I don't even think that they're trying to be that vague about that, for sure. Like, they're just this old lesbian that you have hanging around, it's like she's a classic. She's totally like a, it's like in the 80s, this character always appears in movies and stuff, was like this, oh, you were single? You never got married. Okay, you did have a roommate for a long time, right? Like, now you have cats. Like,
yeah. Oh, you have a foster daughter. Interesting.
Yep.
Okay. We're not gonna investigate why she's calling you mom. That's okay. No, I'm not against it.
Yeah.
I just have questions.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. I have questions.
Oh, you took her to Paradise Island. She met your mom? That's nice. She met your mom. Okay. That's fine. I'm not saying anything. I'm just suggesting it, you know?
saying anything is like basically the vibe. She pops up just to yell for a hot second in this comic, yeah. I think, where she's just like, everybody shut up.
She shows up to like weaponize her PhD in archaeology and history, which obviously I love. she's like, I promise you, this lasso is real. I was like, all right, girl. All right. But yeah, we have more time with that wet-haired woman, Danny, and we find out the background of what was going on, the conversation that she had with Steve when they were in the bar getting trashed after getting fired.
Yeah, she's basically trying to seed distrust towards Mindy or whatever, which, like, Mindy has, to be fair, already done herself pretty well. And then has this like very funny scene where she flashes back on getting yelled at by Mindy, where Mindy calls her a simp, which is hilarious. Oh my God. She's just like, you little simp.
And then she pulls out, God save me from illiterate artists. And when I tell you, I stole that immediately. Mindy's fucking funny.
She's funny, okay? Like, God. She didn't have to die for that.
No, she didn't. But I think this is the tragedy of like this kind of character in these books. I think a line we can really draw between her and another character from another franchise is like she's a very candy Southern-esque character. You know, yes. She's like a businesswoman. She's she's a gal on the go. She's his girl Friday in a way. You know, she's like out and about. She's doing things. You know, she's what am I thinking of? Mary Tyler Mooring in a way.
I'm like in the 90s, Parker Posey would have played this character. Yes. Right? Like,
yes. Yeah. Yeah. She has like that and mixed in with like a Katharine Hepburn-y energy as well. Mm-hmm. Like that kind of character that Parker Posey would play. I just adore that. I was another TV reference. I was watching BoJack Horseman, and then the last season there was this character who was like a reporter. And she like, we're going to get this story, see? And it's like, that's very Mindy, you know? It's like very like old timey reporter, you know? She's like.
Save me from illiterate artists. She's just gonna like yell insults, but you just go, you know what? She's busy. That's all right.
I still have a lot of power in this town, you know? You don't know the meaning of hell until you mess with me. I love her. I love her.
And then she's like, I think that too, I mean, you know, her death, we really did lose this iconic pairing between her and Diana because truly... Diana is so sincere at all times that it's just wonderful to watch her interact with a character like Mindy. It doesn't happen enough, and it doesn't happen anymore after this issue. But no. I love, even in this issue, it's like her sincerity is truly the thing that grounds this entire story. It's just the fact that there is in all of this mess... someone who goes, there's a person who died, and that's horrible. So let me get to the bottom of this.
And that's always been like Diana's superpower, is that she is able to empathize. That's how like she heals, right? She is like a warrior for peace, not a warrior, you know, for war. Just to hit on that point about Mindy's personality and the clashing with Diana, I think one of the things that really made me fall in love with the character is that clash. I love, she's a very complicated character, you know, especially as in later issues, I read ahead to the Testament, which is the epilogue section, I think in issue, I want to say 24, 25, where it's Mindy's funeral and like her funeral reading. And you find out about her history, growing up in a conservative Jewish family, having a queer brother and having a younger sister who like really kowtowing to like the family line, and her experience as like the black sheep of that family, and the way in which she made a lot of mistakes is really the point of that story. The fact that she isn't like Diana, she isn't soft, she isn't cuddly, she isn't even necessarily kind, but she has that thing that I think makes the feelings that Diana has in this issue really hit for me. She's like someone who is herself. She is someone who is honest. You know, even like in this spiral that we're seeing, she's like, with all those rough edges, all those spiky bits, those sassy comments, that, you know, she is essentially herself at her most truth the whole time. And the way in which that kind of resonates with Diana as someone who is like the warrior of truth or the goddess of truth eventually or whatever, you know, I find that like a really beautiful interplay, because like you're saying, I don't know if Diana necessarily even liked Mindy, just like everybody else didn't like Mindy, but she mourns her death because she saw Mindy and like respected her. And in the same way that, you know, I think in the early parts of the story and her appearances, she was the person who saw Wonder Woman and then made her the superhero celebrity with her publicist, super publicist powers. And yeah, I find that as like an interesting thematic between them. You don't often have someone in a story, like you were saying, also who Wonder Woman doesn't like, you know, but who isn't a villain. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Totally. And like, I feel like that adds such interesting colors to Diana's personality, who specifically when we're talking about this run after Mindy goes, you know, Diana ends up becoming someone who, well, she you take off some shadows, you know, because she doesn't have that interaction.
Yeah, I think so too. And I love the fact that all of Diana's interactions with women are almost always just so fascinating, right? And that idea of, you know, Barbara Minerva is one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
And there is that kind of, for Barbara, there's like a very pronounced cruelty in her. But with Mindy, it doesn't really feel like Mindy's particularly cruel so much as she is self-protective, right? And so
she's spiky.
Yes, exactly. And that I love. I mean, I love both of those characters, but it's a lot easier for me to sympathize with Mindy. Also, Mindy really doesn't have a chance. You knew that character was probably not long for this world, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But they gave her such a voice before, like, I mean, that's kind of the issue with like women in the refrigerators and all of that stuff, is like the characters not having this like arc, I guess. And weirdly, Mindy does have a pretty solid arc.
Yeah. And it's really surprising. I was also flicking back through some older issues and seeing how early the story was seeded. Like, it felt like a character, like you were saying, that when she was created with intention. This is another point. I don't remember which episode it was that you were doing. I think it might have been the Alpha Flight episode that you did, and you were talking about these older issues with small characters, because they were going on for a long time. These kind of supporting characters actually had a time to develop. They, because of the way that these comics were being written, you know, they had the space to actually like become valuable characters. That now that we're talking about this one issue in this book, we've talked about Minerva, we've talked about Julia, we've talked about, you know, so many different small characters that feel real. And that, I think, yeah, obviously it's a big loss. And, you know, if I'm going to use best issue, my time in best issue ever to say anything, is more words in comics, please.
Yeah.
I love a wordy comic.
And that's something that we should definitely mention about this, is it's an incredibly dense comic. Like, being able to pick up a comic and it's been 90 minutes I've been sitting here and reading this 25 page issue. That is not true today. It takes me about 5 minutes to read a comic.
Yeah, I mean, to read like my pull list of the week, I maybe will spend 30 minutes on it. Going through all of them. But like this one, like it takes an hour. It takes time. You really fall into it, and you can really see the love. Well, not even just love, just the thought, you know, in every single world. And like, I love comics like this. I love these old wordy comics that, you know, the industry was so good. It was so good.
I know. Yeah, people really aren't given like the same time, money, allowance,
support.
I think, to be able to go off on this stuff. But God, comics in the 80s read differently than they do today. And that is okay and good, even in some ways. I think that there were a lot of writers who would just be like, trying to nail like the Claremont prose, you know, and not doing the best job. I started reading in the 90s, so there's many examples. But then there's lots of examples of people who nailed it and continued it, like Fabian Nicieza, or like people like that, who are able to pack ridiculous amounts of, dialogue and conversation and captions into a single page.
And it doesn't feel disruptive.
Exactly. Yeah. Here it doesn't. Here it completely helps. You can see, I mean, even for instance, just something I wanted to mention is that, yeah, we have this cop who's kind of talking over everything that's happening. He's the main voice. And though this is maybe not somebody who I would want to hang out with in life, I still think that he's interesting. And I'm glad that he's the one who's telling the story, even though he's kind of pervy as, you know, as he's written here, because he, it's like Diana's effect on people is seen very easily by this guy. Like, you can see the way that he he's viewing her as someone, he is a very like a much more cynical person, and then he's seeing Diana and just like the way that she, there's that panel where she looks over at him and he's like, I am blowing it because she wants something from me, she wants hope from me, she wants information from me, and I can't give her anything. And just the look that passes between them, you see this way that Diana has of disarming everybody around her. And that is something that I love about her. It's something that I think is always great to see in a comic, because there was so many, once again, growing up in the 90s and into like the 2000s, there was a lot of runs on Wonder Woman where they were like, yeah, now she like kills people and is tough. And it's like, I get why you all feel like you need to do this with every character, but Diana was tough before, whenever she was a kind, you know, whenever she was, when she's in this issue, she's tough, but she's also just a good person who cares.
Yeah. She's a humanist. She's compassionate. She is interested. She is empathetic. It's all these things. And interestingly, what you were saying, this was also the run where like that first contested, or maybe first, I don't know, contested that Diana no kill rule, right? Like she's a warrior.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
She's, but and like that does come up in the story, but like it is given the space to actually be examined and philosophized and explored by Diana. And you get to see her when she's accidentally killed someone and feels the guilt of that, when like she is considering it willingly, you know,
when she's against Cheetah, who it's like, what am I gonna do other than kill this woman?
When she's against Cersei and she's like, that woman needs to die.
She actually needs to die. She keeps doing the most horrific things. Yeah, and has no sense of remorse. She's never going to stop.
See, for me, it was just the ponytail. I just did not like the ponytail. But that's just me.
That's just me. Oh, fair. Yeah, God. Cersei. But that's it. I love it when Diana is... when Diana is interacting with these women who are like a little bit, like honestly a lot worse than her, right? Mm-hmm. But she still is having kind of a sense of care. Like the Minerva thing is like, she eventually becomes kind of a better person just by proximity of Diana. She's like, well, I'm less evil now, I guess, because I get it, sort of, but still anti-hero.
The phrase gendered violence is like a lot of what the story's in this book about, especially like here as well. And like even going up to like when we start the story of like Diana exists because the goddess has protested, and that even though the book shies away from like going to talk, like to say this is a feminist story or a story dealing with feminism, or to even mention the word in the pages of this book, it is very much like putting both feet down into like, this is the theme of the exploration. And it really, like throughout the run, it explores that topic in various ways. In this story specifically, I think we're seeing, we're seeing something I think interesting in many ways, where it's like trying to show us this theme. Like we have Mindy as you know, the quote unquote dead girl in the noir story. We have Diana sort of occupying the role of like the investigator, trying to like solve and understand the notion of death that specifically is visited on this woman because of her interactions with men, trying to understand the men who did the specific violence, and the way in which like the story, this is a story about drugs and cocaine, and like the way in which that is also being tied up with masculinity. And I mean, it does a lot of interesting things. Not everything that I necessarily agree with what it's doing, but I think I really appreciate the actual nuance. This issue is very nuanced, and so is the rest of the series.
Oh, yeah, it super is. it continues on with this. I mean, Mindy has her moment, which I really love. The fact that, you know, we actually get to see her telling Skeeter off. She's like, you can't keep blackmailing me. You are a complete piece of shit. Like, get out of here. And of course, that doesn't end well for her. But even when he tries to use coke to bargain, she picks up the wine bottle and comes at his ass. So, like, Mindy rocks, you know? Like, she has problems. I'm not saying she's perfect. If she were my boss, I would probably want to quit that job. But also, you know, she's cool, and this is why people like her. That's why this guy is completely broken up about the fact that she fired him and they're not gonna hook up anymore, is because
she's a publicist, she's a charisma machine.
That's right,
she
charisma
will cut
machine.
You if she needs to.
she will scream in your face and tell you to get out of her office, Skeeter LaRue. We've got to mention, because I have forgotten it a couple of times, Carol Flynn, George Perez's wife, is the person who plotted this. She's the person who came up with this story. They credit her at the beginning. We were talking a little bit about feminism and how it's like, you know, this whole run does kind of, they don't come out and say it, of course, but also there's not the same antagonism towards feminists that you do see in a lot of Wonder Woman comics. Yeah. There will be a writer who will take Wonder Woman on and use that as a platform to be like, and feminism is stupid or whatever. And you're just like, and the Wonder Woman's the one who's saying it, you know, in the comic. And you're like, that doesn't work for me. I hate this comic. I mean,
that must be, now it's camp. Now would you just look at it and be like, all right, girl, okay.
Now it has officially become a parody. But this comic certainly does not feel that way. And as you were saying, it's not that women are like, you know, it's not net positive with women. Like, there's a bunch of rocky, messed up women characters in this book, in this run. But they live and breathe. You know, it's like a character that I believe. I'm like, yeah, totally, Mindy. Yeah, that's a person you could easily meet, it feels like, in 1987.
She's a very identifiable, like, character. I did also want to ask, so I just realized I don't know if we've reached that moment in the book, but where they're talking about the Lasso of Truth. And I do always think about the Lasso of Truth, about being like, how is she not sued all the time?
Yes. Like, so what's the legal precedent here?
Yes. Like, you're telling me this magic goddess lasso is going to get the truth out of someone? Like, I don't understand how, like, she's allowed to use it. But I do love this moment where we actually get a confrontation of that, where we get that sort of questioned and explored. I like this moment of kind of hard ethics in comic. I just kind of wanted to point it out because I feel like we don't often sit with it too often. So I really appreciate that we did this time.
Yeah, I agree that I totally agree with that, especially someone like Diana. It's like you would think that, I don't know, things like bodily autonomy would be really important to her. So
yes,
this idea of forced truth telling is very cop like and also very ethically ambiguous, I would say, especially when you walk around in an American flag all day. You have a moment of just being like, so what is this? So yeah, as you said, no answers, no solutions, but we do have some questions and they are brought up on the page. And I also appreciate that because I do think we should think about that a little bit sometime.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think sometimes the job of a comic isn't necessarily to answer the questions, but to like point us in the direction of thinking about them so that we can come up with our own answers. Right.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
So
100%.
And I think maybe that's something that like people are not as geared towards doing today. Just as someone who like observes fandom discussions of comic books, like as they're happening weekly. I find that really interesting, the way in which people take a stance rather than just like actually, you know, but then as the first sort of choice reaction, as opposed to sort of questioning and looking at it. Yeah, I this comic does that. So
I think, because we have like people are very reactive, right? And I am too. So that's not a judgment call. But I think that people really want every issue to answer all of their questions now. And that's just simply is not how serialized storytelling works. So, and there's some things that you can't answer. Like, what is the consent issues with this? Like, that's a question right now. It doesn't even have an answer yet. We'd have to think about it, you know?
No, I completely agree. And like, same. I'm also like a person who's reactionary, but...
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
And I do think maybe partly is because, I mean, just to go back to, I guess, the thread we were talking about earlier is like now a lot of, I'm more of a Marvel head, so I'll say a lot issues tend to end around like 5 to 6 issues. And so sometimes you're like, okay, this is the one chance I have for you to tell me why this is happening in my book.
That's right.
And so I think maybe like there is that other thing anxiety. Basically, I think just give people more money to write more books. solution.
That's what I like. I think that'd be great. And I want to see more experimental stuff because at the time, I mean, obviously this was at a time when comics were doing a lot. You know, we had just seen The Crisis was this kind of game changer. Crisis on Infinite Earths. If anybody needed me to tell them what that meant, the comic Crisis on Infinite Earths, which also
how do
George
you not
Perez
know already?
Works on.
They did it 16 times.
They've
Jesus.
Done it at least 16 times. Yeah, less groundbreaking perhaps as time goes on, but at the moment, you know, it was huge, and they really had relaunched a bunch of characters. So of course, whenever you talk, like you have an interview with George Perez, and he says, yeah, everybody didn't care about Wonder Woman, and I was wondering why she wasn't getting a relaunch along with these other, like, you know, Batman, Superman, you know, all of these guys. Mm. It's like everybody was getting a relaunch except for Wonder Woman, and she seemed like the one who was in the most desperate need of that. So this idea of reimagining it and introducing all of this stuff that's canon, but then also taking issues like this just to be like, I'm just going to do something weird and hope it works out. And it's like, it's so good. It becomes one of the best Wonder Woman stories ever told. But from an editorial perspective, I would imagine this would be like kind of a risk, right? Because it's so much text. And it's kind of not the norm of what's going on in the issue, in the series, you know, and you're killing a character that was not a fan favorite, unless you're me or you at the time. And I don't know. It's fascinating. I love this issue. It's wild how it's, you know,
it happened.
How it even happened. It's like, it's from an idea from his wife. So that's somebody who like, isn't necessarily like a full-time comics professional. And so this idea of just the experimentation around this issue, I think is a big part of what makes it so fun and also what makes it so good.
Yeah. And just to hit on that point, I mean, if you're going to compare it to something semi-similar, just think about like how big Bendis had to be before Jessica Jones could do an issue like this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Similar-ish issue in terms of structure. Like, Bendis had to be, like, the biggest name in Marvel Comics before that happened. Or, like, on the precipice of that. So, you know, like, dig into these old stories. Go to the 80s. Go to the 70s. Go to the 60s. We were talking about Archie earlier as well. Like, there's such a treasure trove that you can just fall in.
You're not going to love everything, but that's okay. Why do you need to? You know? Like, that's how I feel. I'm always like... Because I think people are constantly just like, where should I start with comics? And it's like, there's just choose one and don't
choose
take it
cover
that seriously.
You like.
Yeah, like just character you like, cover you like.
Yeah, I've taken so many friends to comic book shops where I was just like, literally just like, find a cover you like and go. And I will tell you the 2 issues you need beforehand to get the start of the story and then the 2 after. Like, that's it. Like, that's all you need. I mean, another reason why I really love Wonder Woman is I was a mythology kid.
Same.
So like,
right.
Yeah. Like, oh God, this is why I call Best Issue Ever my cousin podcast.
By the way.
For many different reasons, but because of things like this.
Yep. But mythology nerds.
Yeah, I was mythology nerds, like Egyptian gods and goddesses, Greek gods and goddesses, Roman. Like, I was all into that. So obviously, and I think I can probably source back my Wonder Woman like love to also my Xena love. You know, like, because I think they're in the same continuum.
Oh, they have to be. I mean. Yeah.
There was a comic. I found out about this the other day. There's like a Gail Simone comic, like crossover, Xena and Wonder Woman, that was never released.
I know the Xena comics, and I know the Wonder Woman comics, and I know Gail Simone, and I did not know that existed.
No, I found out about, I saw it yesterday. Apparently it's all drawn and ready, but like the rights fell through, and so it's just unpublished. I'm just like, give me that right now. I think it's Wonder Woman 77, the Linda Carter one.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's cool.
We need this.
Yeah, what's going on with the... Yeah, I mean, that's a conversation in and of itself, but what is happening with the licensing rights with Xena? Because there hasn't been a comic that I'm aware of since the Vita Yala mini-run, which was like, great.
And it feels like Xena comics need to exist, right?
Like, I need to write them. I'm like, who's going to give me this job?
You know what? Oh, my God. I think we just stumbled onto $1 million. Someone is listening right now. Please help us make this happen.
Yeah.
You would write such a good Xena comic. Oh, my God, Sarah.
It's like one of the only dreams of my existence. I'm like, Roy Thomas got to write Xena. So if I don't get to write Xena, I don't know what the world is doing.
Did Roy Thomas get to write Xena?
Yeah, he writes an episode of Xena, and he also wrote some of her comics where she like marries Hercules and goofy shit like that. Yeah, I mean, the 90s were a wild time, right? Like, people are just like, they're straight. And you're just like, why do they keep taking baths? They just constantly are in a tub together.
I mean, she used her hair to wash her feet or something. It was getting biblical. It was getting biblical.
Yeah.
This is romantic love. Stop it.
Once it gets into season 6, and like, there's still episodes where they're like, sure, straight stuff. But like, most of season 6 is them just being like, we're not really going to try to hide this anymore because we got canceled.
And also, they had a daughter, didn't they?
Yeah, they legit like, they had a daughter. That was like season 5. Yeah, Gabrielle's literally the dad. I mean, there's so much going on in that show. But once it starts to go, like, yeah, there's a certain point where like, one of the last episodes of the show, Xena goes to get a poem from Gabrielle's favorite poet, Sappho, and you're just like, listen.
Listen. Oh my God, I remember that.
The plausible deniability is gone.
Guys. Guys, it's giving Pink Pony Club. It's giving it's giving Katie Lang. It's giving Jody. It's giving all the girls. Like, enough is enough. Like, come on. It's the 90s. It's fine now.
Yeah, except for on network television. But they were like, I don't know, whatever. And, you know, honestly, same with Diana. Diana's another one of those characters where you're like, you cannot tell me that she did not have sex with Barbara Minerva at some point in her history, especially after the Greg Rucka run came out.
I mean, come
on. You're just like, they definitely hooked up. I will never believe anything else. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like, I find the forced heterosexualization of Diana to be just, like, insane. Like, it is cuckoo. What is this? Like, she comes from a paradise island of women. Like, it's just, I can't. Like, I really don't even have it in me to argue against it.
Yeah, it's like, it's one of those weird things where it's the same as Xena, where you're just kind of like, to what end is this character straight, though?
To what end? Sorry. You can do that. I'm gonna do the reference.
To what end?
To what end? To what end?
Oh my God.
Yeah. So what? So right.
Okay,
we sort of sidetracked from
it. Turns into a Maya Rudolph podcast. So I guess we've got to.
Don't tempt me. Gaze in space. I'm sorry. Yes. Dion's here. Okay, let's we're on the home stretch. Diana goes through this whole thing, and then in the end, she finds out that Skeeter did shoot Mindy, but planted the evidence on Steve Landon, who came in really drunk and then passed out, I guess, and then he stabbed him. And then, like, planted the evidence. But then, in the final pages of the issue, after Diana finds that out and believes that Skeeter killed her, she is told that the coroner report has come in, and that Mindy actually died from a cerebral hemorrhage before the assaults with the rifle. And so in the end, that happened because of the final baggie of cocaine that Skeeter threw at her after their argument, that she took and then passed away. And it's all very sad when Diana finds out about that. And that is the story.
I don't know, if I were in that position and somebody had come in and I had to chase them out of my office with a bottle. It's like at that point you're like, look, one more is not gonna hurt, right?
So and she was like, look, I'm dressed in like my 80s best, I'm in my hot pink, like if not now if not now then when? You tell me that, tell me when, if not now. She took a sniff and then God snuffed her out.
Yep, but Skeeter still sucks and is totally still liable in the cause of everything.
Yes, but the good news is about Skeeter is that when Diana went to the warehouse to try and find him, he got scared because of the attacks on Diana and ran away from her and jumped on an electric fence and passed away as well.
He is dead ski.
And that is how Conan quit The Late Show.
Oh my god, it is how that was the final episode of Conan O'Brien ever.
And that's how we all got stuck with Leno in the 90s. And, after that, it's all very sad. And the article ends with a really nice line, I think, about, I stared at the photos of Diana and of Mindy Mayer, another beautiful bird who just wanted to keep flying higher until she ran out of the sky.
I cried, yeah.
Yeah, it is really sad. And it sucks that, you know, we don't get Mindy back. But I think I quite appreciate the fact that it didn't end with like she beat her addiction and she was fine forever, but then it showed us like what can happen with addiction. I would have liked if she continued on in the book and was someone that was in recovery and actually negotiating and dealing with what that means in addiction as it actually exists in your life, but it didn't give us a rosy story, which I think at the time, if you're thinking of like the after school specials, it had a very specific narrative that was also not true to life. So we can appreciate that somewhat, but also, yeah, it sucks. And Mindy needs to come back. And they only brought her back once in like, I think, DC Rebirth. And then she went away again. And it's not fair.
Yeah, that's not fair. And I like her because she doesn't take any shit. And it's great. I am very happy about her in this because she doesn't care if you are looking at her with sad eyes because you had a thing and now it's done. She doesn't care. The Skeeter is trying to throw coke at her. She's just like, no. I'm going to hit you with a bottle. Get out of here. Everybody's done. I'm sick of this. Everybody's been riding high on my dime and I'm done.
She's like, yeah, you see here, I'm out of this world. I'm out of you all. I'm done. See, I'm done, you see?
I don't know what she sounds like. She's like a Jean Harlow character.
Very that. I will say this isn't in the issue, but there's like a postscript story that if we've enticed people to actually explore this run or this issue, that I would recommend that they also dig up, because it's a really lovely story and you get to find out about her gay brother and her family life, and you know, we get to see a side of Mindy that Diana didn't see until after she went away. I also think, you know, in the great story arc of this book, even though we don't get it a lot, this book is also one of the ones that I think brought in the Well of Souls, which is how Amazons are created in Wonder Woman, which is when women in the world die because of the violence of man, then they get reincarnated as Amazons and get a new life. So I like to think, you know, Mindy's back somewhere. And I wish that came into the story, that it ended with like a new Mindy somewhere. But, you know, maybe that's another story for another day. DC,
time for Candy Southern style resurgence and interest in this character, because we need her back. If you wanted to read a really good Wonder Woman comic, I guess that this should be on your list, because not everybody knows where to begin with Wonder Woman. And unlike many other characters, as I've said, there's dead zones of Wonder Woman that you just don't want to go into.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's definite start points as well.
Yeah, tons of times people have no idea what they're doing with this character, but this run is incredible. It lasts for a long time, even whenever he's not doing the pencils anymore. Mm. Oh, and we should probably mention Bob McLeod does the inks on this, and those are incredible as well. Oh, like, yeah. The whole creative team is A-game, like,
yes,
across
it's
the board.
It's John Costanza as the letterer, Carl Gafford. Yep. As the colorer, Karen Berger, who is the editor, and we mentioned Carol Flynn, who was the person who came up with the idea, and also happened to be married to George Perel.
Yeah, Karen Berger in 5 minutes was going to launch Vertigo, you know, like, so this is just completely, I don't know, this era of Wonder Woman is definitely must read. I also love, you know, many other runs. I think particularly one post like 2014, like there was a very long run of great Wonder Woman stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, Nubia has come back in a huge way and is incredible. So the supporting cast of Wonder Woman, we see a lot of it here. There's a ton of supporting cast. And that's something that, once again, this run does very well, is to be like, wow, shouldn't Diana have women friends?
Yes.
And then
yes.
She meets some and hangs out with them and it's great. But yeah, that's basically a thing. You don't always see it. And now today there's a lot of superheroes around Wonder Woman, of course, who have their own trajectories and their own stories. So the universe has done nothing but expand. Not everything's perfect going forward from the George Perez run, but definitely... Wonder Woman absolutely rocks, and if you want to know why we love her, this is a good place to go.
Yes, and shout out to George Perez, who, if you are a person just getting into comics, I will say, just like Google George Perez, find what he's written and drawn, and just go through that. That's a good place to start as well.
Yeah. Whew, the art,
oh my
it
God.
Is pretty.
I cannot even, like, I want every single, every page. I was taking screenshots and I was like, I don't know what to do. I'm going to like plaster my walls with it. Like, it's so beautiful. It is gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. He's ridiculous. So I was going to ask, because obviously with the podcast, what do you have that's coming up?
Oh God. Actually it's November now we're recording, and I have reached my 1 year anniversary of the podcast.
Wow.
So, so it's been exciting, and I'm planning a bunch of things. So what do I have coming up on the deck? I have an episode about Got to Be Real, which was an internet web show, and we're doing a deep dive on that, and we're talking about like divadom and stand-dom and stan culture through the guise of that. I'm like truly thinking of the list, because let me just pull it up. Do bear with me.
We're doing an episode, listeners.
Yes, yes.
It'll probably go up before this one will go up, but
yeah, probably we are.
We're recording
you and I...
it tomorrow.
Yes, we're recording another episode tomorrow. Sarah's porting over to my podcast and feed, and we're going to be talking about Agatha All Along. It's a proper deep dive into what has been like an obsession of mine for the past couple of months that I'm really excited to dig into with you.
Yes.
I told Connor that I will be stealing your lesbian correspondent just for a brief time. So thank you for volunteering your services. I'm really excited to get into that. And what else is happening? Sorry, like I told you earlier before we were recording, I do too many things. So I have like 26,000.
Yep.
But this is another thing I did want to make sure I mentioned is because you mentioned Archie. I have an Archie episode that's hopefully also coming next month with Karen Charm. Yeah, with Karen Charm. We're talking, I know, it's good. It's so good. I'm really excited to share it. But yeah, a lot of different things. Come join us on the journey. And I'm really excited about tomorrow, though. I have so many notes, Sarah, about Agatha All Along. Like, good luck to you. I will be singing. I have practiced all five versions of the song. It's happening.
Oh, good.
Okay? Like,
oh, yeah. What a instantly unforgettable song. I'm very excited, too. I'm thrilled.
Can I get, like, a little hint about, like, what... Give me like a one sentence opinion about Agatha All Along. This is a tease for the people.
I loved it. It drew me in very, very quickly, which Disney doesn't always. But I also, by the end of it, I was like, it does have that weird Disney morality, doesn't it? Where you're just kind of like, I'm not sure what the... I know that you have a moral, but I'm not quite for sure what message I'm supposed to take from this. But in the meantime, who cares? Support women's rights and women's wrongs is basically where I ended up. But yeah, we'll get into it obviously tomorrow. But I was definitely watching it just being like, this, oh, and I mean, Jennifer Kale, right? Like, what else am I going to say? Jennifer Kale, everything.
Jenny. Jenny. Yeah, we're gonna have fun. We're gonna have fun tomorrow. Jenny. It's Jenny. I'm Jenny. Sorry. but yeah, I guess. Well, yeah, just put an asterisk next to that. We will circle back.
Where do people follow you if they want to follow you?
Well, if you would like to follow me, you can find me at AlsoPurp, AlsoPurp, on all social medias. So I am on the Instagrams, the dreaded place that I'm trying to leave, and I'm trying to build on Blue Sky. and you'll also find us on TikTok. And Referential is also a YouTube video essay kind of page. So find us on YouTube as well if you want to check out Referential in video.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I didn't actually know that. So that's great.
Oh, yes. You can also watch them on Spotify. They're really fun.
Thank you for being my first Wonder Woman guest. I'm so thrilled. I'm going to do another. We're going to cover Historia with Kaiming Chang whenever both of us have time. So I'm looking forward to that, obviously. That's going to be like 3 hours probably.
Amazing.
I'm very excited. Honestly,
I am so jealous. I'm so jealous. I would have, I think that was on like the preemptive list in my head when I was like trying to think up what to suggest when you invited me on.
Totally.
And Historia was also like a consideration. No, that's going to be, I can't wait for that episode. That's going to be so good.
So many good Wonder Woman stories though. Yeah,
so
I have the
good.
Same issue. I love the issue that's just Wonder Woman hanging out with Lois Lane. Like, it's like Lois is like, I'm here to conduct an interview and I do not understand this woman. And it's just like, so good.
It's amazing. I also love, I kind of just love every issue where, speaking of Lois, like anytime Wonder Woman tries to date Superman and then changes her mind, she's like, no. Except for like that weird period in the 2000s when they actually made them go together. But then they erased that from existence. So yay.
And it didn't work too good either.
I mean,
it was just like, what is this? You're just like, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, but that's fine. Whatever.
Remember the time where they like caused national disasters all over the world by just like having sex?
Yeah.
Amazing.
And you're like,
amazing,
is this
amazing
actually
comic.
In a comic?
Why? We don't know. But it happened. So many Wonder Woman stories. So many dark holes you could fall down. But I encourage
that's
them.
That's true.
I encourage that.
Oh my God. Well, thank you so much for being on this
thank
show.
You.
This ruled. And I truly cannot say any more positive things about this issue because it just is so good that, I mean, if we haven't convinced you, then I feel that you cannot be convinced.
Yes, it's not my fault. It's yours. I did what I can. I just realized we went through this whole recording without me singing the Wonder Woman theme song once. So I got to amend that. So Wonder Woman. All right. Thank you.
I was like, okay. I was headbanging. I was in. I was immediately down. I love that theme song. I mean, you know, Batman, of course, Batman has an iconic theme song, but we really can't get rid of Wonder Woman. It's just so good.
Wonder Woman, the kids are playing that today. Who's playing Na 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 Na? No one. I tell you that. No one. That flop, bat rat. No one cares. No one cares. Wonder Woman. All right, thank you, bye.
Thank you, goodbye.
And so it is that we wrapped another episode of Best Issue Ever. I have been your host, Sarah Century. This podcast is recorded in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It is edited by me. The theme music is provided by Earth Control Pill, whose work can be found at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com. I do not want to deal with ads at all. So if you also don't want to deal with ads, please consider supporting the podcast by rating and reviewing and or signing up at the Ko-fi, which is ko-fi.com/Sarah Century Podcast. Finally, you could support my other ventures, including the narrative horror podcast Medusa Mask, as well as my work through QueerSpec, including the Bitches on Comics podcast and the Decoded Horror Channel podcast. Visit my website at sarahcentury.com to sign up for my newsletter for updates. Oh, and I'm a horror writer, so pick up my short story anthology, A Small Light and Other Stories, not to be confused with the Nat Geo series, through Weird Punk Books, or pretty much wherever else you get books. Thanks for being here, folks. Cheers.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.